This is Jessica Magielka, and welcome to The Fly-Through, where we talk about all things commercial and corporate real estate. Hi, it's Jessica again. I just got finished interviewing Carolyn Bates, the lead researcher here at JLL based in Minneapolis. She covers the Minneapolis Twin Cities market, but also the larger Midwest. We had a great conversation about life in the middle of the coronavirus and some of the conversations around what we think, what we in the world of real estate think could happen, might happen, and at least framing up some of those conversations for you. We are not forecasting the future at this point. This is recorded on March 31st, 2020, so date stamping seems especially prudent these days. I hope you're all staying healthy and safe and sheltering in place. And if you have any thoughts or comments or feedback, please feel free. And if you enjoy the episode or any of the others, please consider subscribing in iTunes. We did have a few slight audio quality issues on this one. Recording from the home office was a little more challenging than anticipated, so I hope you still enjoy the episode. Stay healthy. Thank you. All right. Well, Carolyn Bates, welcome to the Fly-Through. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me virtually.
I know, both of us in our respective home offices, like the good shelter-in-place people we are.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So Carolyn and I both work at the JLL Minneapolis office, and our office is mandatorily shut down, as I believe all JLL offices globally probably are at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Carolyn, we are going to talk about what we're seeing out there. Everything is changing. We're recording this on March 31st, 2020. I was looking at some research and a couple of stories that were done in early March, and I feel like this is so fast moving that I want to make sure we've got a date stamp on here. It is, what day of the week is it even? Tuesday? Losing track of days so easily.
I know, me too.
So we'll talk about, okay, you guys are just... So every quarter, JLL Research puts out a look backwards at the previous 3 months, and we're at that point. You guys are doing your look back right now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just wrote it, and right now, in the context of everything that's happening and all this like this rapid change in just like status in regards to shelter in place policy and even just like how the economy is doing, everything is shifting so rapidly, so we have to go through all these iterations of approval to make sure that we're not misrepresenting anything. And there's a delicate balance to strike in regards to like we do need to summarize what happened this past quarter, and most of this past quarter was just business as usual. And so that's important to highlight, you know, all the new leases that were signed prior to COVID-19, all the absorption that occurred this year, you know, who moved in, who moved out. There was some capital markets activity at the beginning of this quarter. So we need to capture all of that. That's our job. But we also need to really be truthful about how that has all shifted dramatically in a matter of weeks. So it's kind of a weird place to provide this retroactive view of only 3 months where such big shifts occurred. And we also can't just scare people either. And so we need to be, you know, transparent and talk about the facts. That's our job in research. We talk about facts and we have numbers. And it's really not our place right now to speculate or forecast because nobody can. Things are just developing so quickly that any forecast we do put out would be out of date, frankly, in a matter of days.
Yeah. And I think to me, that was one of the most interesting pieces of the research conversation that frankly we've been having on an almost daily basis as a group and on individuals one-on-one is that JLL Research as a whole is not giving a forecast, a look forward, educated guess of what's going to happen. So I think that's going to be the kind of overlay of this entire episode is we're going to have a conversation about what we think might happen, or at least what people are talking about what they think might happen in a review of what did happen in this last quarter. But there's so much that we don't know right now. I think this episode in particular is really going to be based in the we don't know. There's a lot of things changing and we'll have to figure it out as we go, but we'll give people an idea of what the conversations sound like that inside of big real estate companies and companies are having right now.
Yeah. And I think through all of this, the meatier and more interesting topics to really tackle is how is this going to affect commercial real estate long-term? So I think we can all agree that, you know, eventually at some point, you know, some of this will normalize and we'll flatten the curve like we've all been working hard to do. So once that curve is flattened and, you know, at some point when people do start feeling free to go into public spaces and to be with people again, whether that's in, you know, in retail or in office space, like how is this whole event going to shift the way that we think and utilize space? And I think that is kind of fascinating because we all are getting a crash course right now on what it's like to work from home and the pros and the cons. And there's these like this divergence of like just assumptions. You know, some brokers believe that people are gonna lean more into working from home because we realize like there's a lot of advantages. And I don't want to digress, but I save so much time like by not having to shower every morning and pick out my outfit for the day and like get on the bus and commute into work. There's a lot of advantages, but disadvantages.
And we're both sitting here looking at each other. So we are looking at each other right now and we both have our hair back in ponytails and I'm wearing a fleece and, you know, but okay, let's come back to some of those points. Let's start with a time in the Twin Cities in the U.S. commercial real estate market that we barely even remember at this point. Carolyn, give us a quick overview of those bucolic, lovely times of Q1 2020. What happened before COVID-19?
In the quarterly report that will be released in the coming days, I think there were kind of three themes in terms of trends. One was, right now in the Twin Cities, we have a handful of projects for financial firms. And the exception is RBC, which is not a build-to-suit, but they're basically like the anchor, RBC is the anchor tenant of RBC Gate. So we have a lot of construction happening for banks and financial institutions right now. And as those occupiers kind of wait for construction to complete and for them to have their new home to move into, there were some absorption activity as those occupiers kind of, you know, like how do you renew and like make sure the timing is perfect in regards to, you know, your current lease and then you're going to move into your new space. And then Thrive and Financial, they moved their investment services arm into AT&T Tower. And so they realized that their global headquarters will not have enough space or not be flexible enough to accommodate the investment services division. And so it's interesting that they kind of bifurcated some of their staff, you know, moving one division into a traditional lease in a building that would be able to accommodate future growth. So financial services, you know, big picture planning strategy for, you know, their future occupancy. I think that's kind of interesting, you know, what goes into the new headquarters or what goes into the new office space and, you know, how do you divvy up basically new construction and the benefits of that versus a lease with a landlord that you know, have some flexibility for negotiation in the future.
Yeah. Did you see a lot of, I know one of the conversations we were having at the end of last year was a lot of capital flows and lots of new capital. Did you see a lot of capital moving in Q1 this year?
So prior to COVID-19, a lot of that did slow down, to be honest. There, there were some deals, trying to be careful about confidentiality. There were some deals that were on the market that were really close to being completed, and there was going to be good capital there. But COVID-19 kind of upended those deals. Yeah. So it was so much of the capital markets world is like the long game. You know, it takes a long time to sell an asset, and it takes a long time to negotiate with buyers. So like we only had about like 2 months of capital markets activity before this all happened this past quarter. And capital markets people, you know, institutional investors are smart. Like they were able to smell some of this coming long before the rest of us lay folk realized that there was a lot on the horizon. And it's because a lot of it is, you know, these institutions are so globally connected. And so as soon as stuff started happening in China, and you know, the travel ban started to occur, that's when the brakes were kind of hit.
Starting to pump the brakes on the capital market side already. No, I mean, and if you think about it, yeah, a lot of this started in China in December. So folks that had that global view really had, I would argue, an advantage when they're deciding where and how to deploy their money. Mm-hmm. So the Twin Cities, at least specifically, fairly ho-hum, a few big moves happened from the larger US. Would you agree with that same kind of broader assessment moving forward, things happening, a pretty normal real estate market?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, January, February were like good, healthy months. And I think we can all realize that we were sort of on the tail end of all landlord favorable conditions. I mean, everything is cyclical in our industry, and people have been talking about an oncoming recession since like 2018, even if not sooner, depending on how risk adverse you may be. But we all knew that at some point we were going to shift into a tenant favorable market. We're all on a clock. It's what they call it, the property clock. And some markets like Chicago hit midnight, you know, a while ago, and so they're kind of the harbinger for what's going to happen in the Twin Cities and smaller Midwest markets. So there's a natural slowdown that was going to occur anyways, but it was still all growth. That has been shifted, of course.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Okay. All right. So we ran smack into COVID-19. Let's see. So let's talk a little bit without forecasting. Let's talk a little bit about some buckets of conversations that are being had out there kind of by, I don't know, almost groups. So project management and construction. What are we seeing the impacts now at the very end of March of the COVID-19 slowdown on construction, would you say?
So we have a PDS, Project Development Services / Construction research lead for the US at JLL. And on a daily basis, he's updating a map of where construction stands state by state. And a lot of this is really municipality by municipality. Some cities are, you know, halting construction, or just it's more difficult to have construction continue based on local government and even just, you know, like the whole system to get approvals and to move through the system.
So even if you're technically allowed or are part of the essential workforce for construction, we are seeing people not be able to get the inspections they need from local inspectors and local governments and get the approvals they need to actually move forward. What are you seeing? I'm also hearing that since a lot of the factories have now all shut down, that there are certain kind of just components for furniture that you just can't get the door frame right now to finish the building.
Yeah. Yeah. Materials are hard to come by. And beyond the factories too, just the supply chain to get the materials from the factories to their destination, those are all being held up. And the Canadian-US border closure is a huge impact, especially for us in Minnesota, because a lot of lumber comes from Canada, and Canada is our most proximate foreign neighbor, obviously. But there's a lot of Canadian Minnesota synergies and a lot of cross-border, import into the state of Minnesota for some finishing, and it goes back to Canada and vice, it's a very permeable border. It always has been. And that closure is dramatically affecting materials, and they're just not ready.
Well, let's talk about supply chain then, because what my understanding of a lot of this stuff is that supply chain is still, is obviously interrupted, and depending on which industry you're in, it's more interrupted, but that it's fundamentally changing where ships are coming in which ports and even which coast. So our coastal cities on the east are starting to get some of the container ships out of China. And so what I've been hearing from the industrial segment is that warehousing, so all of that shifting need, I guess, is changing. And one possible overhang of this is an increase in warehousing demands, not just from the retail sector, but also from that people won't have as tight of a supply chain anymore. They will, as a risk management strategy, will be keeping more supplies closer. So they're going to need more physical space to put that stuff into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, distribution has been upended. The prediction across the board, and this is not my prediction, we've already seen the industrial sector is the strongest right now because of those requirements for whether it's temporary or long-term warehousing, and just need more nodes in the distribution networks.
Yeah. And I'm also hearing too, we are definitely hearing from the medical kind of space and some of those really essential groups and companies out there that they need certain warehousing space right now, or they need call center type space, or they need support function space in some fashion, if you will. One of the things we were talking about before we got online was, I think some of this also kind of reminds me of creative ways that some companies are moving. So Delta changed their museum, I think. We helped, JLL mm-hmm. helped them change their museum into a safe call center where they could have essential call center staff to help folks that are stuck in God knows where in the world, in their customer service. So I've seen pictures of it. It's this really interesting, somebody sitting over here and then somebody sitting 8 feet over there. And it's considered a safe call center that they just threw together.
Yeah. And it's a brilliant repurposing of space. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that. But call centers are critical right now. And what I've heard informally is that it's about 50-50 split. So about half call center operations in the US can be done remotely from home. And then the other half really do need to be in a centralized location, and they need to have consistent infrastructure, just in terms of, Wi-Fi access or fiber access. There's going to be an increased demand for creative solutions for contact centers.
Yep. And I think this is going to be a long-term impact on commercial real estate around how people design their space and what is that going to look like. And back to the call center thing before we kind of pivot a little bit, that doesn't even, the US call center is 50-50. I heard the number today, 6 million call center seats in India and the Philippines, both of which are under a full country lockdown. So all these companies that have outsourced, and not really outsourced, but sent some of their back office functions and some of their call center functions to India and the Philippines in the last 5 years, they're going to have to figure out how to maintain their call center functions in the future in a way that you can't send in India, the infrastructure at home does not exist for anybody to be able to pivot to working from home like you and I are with our headsets and our computers and our internet access. And so call centers are going to be a really interesting space to watch. I think in the next 30 days, there's going to be a run on call center space. And, you know, you can outsource those things and hire call center companies and all of that good stuff. So I think the call centers will be really interesting. Okay.
To that point, though, I think there's a broader conversation too about jobs. Like the reason we outsource so many call centers and also just for the audience, like call centers and contact centers are basically synonymous. So we might use the words interchangeably, but Americans outsource contact centers to other nations because we're at peak employment. Like we had such a low unemployment rate in the United States that we couldn't staff contact centers appropriately. And so it was just a viable solution to outsource those jobs. But we have the highest unemployment rate currently than we've experienced in modern history. And maybe there is some benefit to reshoring those jobs.
Yeah. I mean, one of the other reasons too is that it is twice as expensive on an hourly basis to have call center jobs in the US. I think it's around $30 an hour to have a call center job in the US, whereas in India and the range outside offshore is somewhere between $8 and $15, depending on the country that you're in. So the cost also is really different. And I agree, though. That's going to be a really interesting conversation, especially since, have you heard what the latest unemployment number is?
I actually kind of gave myself a personal ban from reading like some of that stuff on a hourly
mental
basis.
Health, hon. Mental yeah. Health, you gotta. It's just, I've personally had a ban too, because and on some stuff, so I just don't read it nonstop because I can't. But we're gonna try and stay above the like anxiety in place here. Okay, so one of the big conversations, and you alluded to it earlier, is, in the future, do we think that people will take more space or less space? And let me frame it up really quickly, and then I'm curious what your thoughts are. The more space people say that employees will want to come back to the office, but they won't want to be jammed into really tight benching where they're sitting on top of each other. They'll want more space to be able to spread out, and that will somehow be safer or feel safer. And the less space people, of course, say everyone's going to love working remote, or companies are going to love the option of having their employees just stay home and not ever come back, so they won't need as much space. What do you think, Carolyn?
My verdict is still out. I don't know. I think a lot of, so like occupiers like PwC, they've had hot desks for a while now, where you can come into the office whenever you want. You don't necessarily get the same desk every time, but there's a seat and a desk for you. I think that is a pretty viable solution, because I have realized that there's some benefit to having a day or two at home where you can focus very thoroughly. I'm getting so much work done, and I'm sure many of our listeners and you as well, Jessica, are like it's a really good time for productivity, but it also, like, you need social interaction. I don't miss my cube at our JLL office. Like what I miss is my colleagues and eating lunch in our kitchen, and having like a conference room where everybody can kind of gather and communicate in person. I think people are going to realize a designated desk doesn't really mean that much. A cube doesn't mean that much. So
that's super interesting, because some of the conversations that I've been hearing is So you're more on the like, I think it could be all of the above, frankly. So I'm just going to give away what I think of all of this. I think all of what we're talking about will happen. It will be totally, totally dependent on the company. But some of the conversation is that the hot desk gang and the remote, like that will go away because people will want to know that they're the only person and their germs are at their desk. Yeah. I'm only sitting with my own germs. I don't have to share your germs when I come in like later in the afternoon or whatever.
That's true. So
I personally think that this is reinforcing the need for office and how important culture and that community is, like you were saying, and how that exactly unfolds. What I do think is going to happen, and I'm going to go right ahead and predict this, is that there's going to be a pretty serious recession and people will just there'll be a lot of layoffs across the board, not across the board, but in a lot of industries, which means it's almost a moot point. Are we going to have more or less space? Because a lot of companies will have more space because they just laid off a bunch of people. I think that's what's going to happen. And then it'll take time for the economy to recover and for companies to refill that space. And by the time that happens for a lot of companies, some of this is obviously a TBD on how the virus morphs and how, is it seasonal? Do we get all of that stuff. But I think there's going to be a lot more space on the market pretty much globally. And I think we're in for a huge property correction. I'm going there. I'm going to say that we're in for a big correction here, and that rents will correct and it will swing towards more of a tenant favorable market as opposed to the landlord favorable market that it's been, at least in the Twin Cities, as you were saying, for the last 7 years.
Yes. You've made a lot of really good points. I'm trying to be diplomatic here, but I mean, I've seen,
You're diplomatic, yes.
I've seen advice or white papers from third parties advising their clients to evaluate headcount. And I mean, it's a really unfortunate effect of this.
It's a hugely unfortunate effect, and I don't want to get too down in the mud. Let's talk about, but while we're down in the depths of the recession conversation, let's talk about retail. What are you seeing for retail? There are two sides of the retail coin, as far as I can see.
So I just want to set this up. I don't actively track retail, so I'm not like the most informed person on this topic, but just me as a citizen of Minneapolis, I've been seeing a lot of announcements of my favorite restaurants or bars or dance clubs closing for good already. And it's been, 2 weeks since shelter in place has taken effect. There's just like with office, there's going to be this serious, just like office users or office using employees, there's going to be this serious reevaluation of, is it viable to keep these employees on payroll, or are we a viable business even? Can we keep paying rent, or should we just fold? I think there's going to be a very different retail landscape when this is all over with.
Yeah. Okay. So you got the bad side of the coin.
Yeah. That's the dark side.
That's the dark side. I will take the lighter side. I think it's lighter. Some of the few companies that are actively hiring a lot of people are fundamentally retail companies. So you've got the Amazons, the 7-Elevens, the Walmarts, hiring hundreds of thousands of people. And so the conversation that I've been kind of seeing and involved in from a super macro level is that this will push retail towards the web and internet retailers much faster than it would have. And that on the other side of this, we're just going to stay a much more virtual shopping world than the bricks and mortar that we've seen for obviously forever.
Yes, I fully agree with that. But I also do think there's still space for bricks and mortar. I mean, going to Target has my local co-op has been a solace in all of this. And I try to be respectful and I'm, you know, I keep my 6 feet social distance, as directed. And, you know, I use hand sanitizer when I go in and when I go out, but, it feels really good to be around people and to go to Target or go to the co-op or the local family owned grocery store. People still desire to have those places that are not home, that are not work, and where you can just kind of like engage with a cashier for a little bit of time.
Yeah. And even once we don't feel like engaging with the cashier is the one of the few humans that we see besides our immediate families, God love them, every day. But I agree with you 100%. I love great retail shops. Like there is an amazing retail shop that I'm going to shout out right now, Flotsam and Fork, and it's in like South Minneapolis or something. And it's amazing. And it's all like French soap and wooden spoons. And like, nobody has to have any of those things, but it's an amazing shop. And I feel amazing when I go in there and I love the experience. It's about experiential stuff. Right. And I will say one of the things that I heard, and I don't know if it's still true, and you can shoot me down if you've heard otherwise, but buying some of this stuff and supporting some of these folks online or buying gift cards from some of these shops may help them just like eke through until hopefully some of the world comes back to normal. So when I'm off the, when we're done with this interview, I'm going to go buy some stuff from Flotsam and Fork.
That's great advice. Yeah. Yeah. I think the big takeaway is we need to put our money where our mouth is and support the businesses that also support their employees. And that's been a place of grace. I just hearing about how, you know, Target is bumping its hourly wage. I think it's Walmart and Target are providing bonuses to their employees, and the employers that are not treating their employees well right now through all this are in a hot seat. And I think they deserve to be, because these are, you know, the workers that are interfacing the most with humans right now and are risking their lives every time they are face to face with a client or a customer. So there's, I think, some good things coming out of this where we can support businesses that, you know, do a good job with creating that experience, but also the employers that treat their hourly workers well.
Yeah. And I think similar kind of conversation, one of the big conversations we've been having, in my day job, when I'm not doing this, I support tenants, right? So I'm a tenant rep broker. And a lot of the questions are, what do we do if we're a company that can't pay rent? Like, we don't have any money. We're completely shut down. We're non-essential. What do we do? And I think the same philosophy applies there. The general advice that I've heard for tenants like that is pay your April rent. And if you haven't already reached out to your landlord, reach out to them and have a conversation. And that landlords that are doing exactly what you're saying for employers, Carolyn, those folks they understand what's happening and they want to work with you to help you figure it out. And so I think if you're a tenant and you're in a pickle and you just don't have the money to pay your rent, call your landlord and have a conversation. There are people on the other side too. And that's certainly a lot of the questions that we've been getting. So opportunities, is it too soon, Carolyn, to talk about opportunities? I feel like it's a little icky, but let's talk about it just really quickly. We talked about it's the market in general is flipping from a landlord to a tenant-friendly market. I think it's too soon to go really hard and just negotiate the heck out of it. I think we need a little bit more time, and companies are still retrenching and figuring out what's next. How much space do they need? How many people are they going to have at the end of this? How are they going to, you know, survive it? But any other opportunities that you're seeing coming out of all of this in the real estate market?
I just saw a really interesting deck today, presentation, basically itemizing how can we make work from home experiences better. So if we do lean into this work from home climate, you know, how can we provide childcare to employees? How do we provide like even just like pet sitting services to our employees? Like, how do we help our employees be healthy at home? Like, how do we encourage, you know, we have like fitness centers in office buildings as amenities, but how do we help to activate that same sort of use when people are not in an office? And how do we improve employee health, whether it's mental or physical?
Yeah.
I think that's similar to the retail conversation. It's like, how do employers like really, how can this moment be used to set up conversations in regards to employee wellness and satisfaction and retention?
I think that's a super interesting point. And I interviewed a guy named Rex Miller who thinks a lot about employee wellness. And even before all of this, his big thesis was around that the employer and the owners of buildings have a larger burden and responsibility to employee wellness than traditionally has been thought. And I think it's such an interesting part of this conversation. Okay, so wait, before we get on go down the wellness track, it's on my list. I thought it would be fun to kind of wrap up a little bit today. You and I talked about, we did a kind of a long conversation late last year, early this year, about trends, like big macro trends that we're seeing out in the world. So keeping in mind, folks, that this was 3 months before the coronavirus thing hit. So I'm really, I want to like, okay, we're going to do it fairly quickly. And the first one, and I want to hear what you, is it still a trend? Is it dead? What are we seeing? The first big trend was a capital is pouring into real estate. Carolyn.
No longer accurate. I mean, the main theme right now is like, the debt markets are maybe, or there's some activity left. But even that's kind of, you know, it's all rapidly changing. It's like right now, what I've been hearing, the theme is that if you're an all cash buyer, this is a great time. But that has not been the case. It wasn't the case last year when we talked about this. Like, there's very few all cash buyers right now. It's like we're commercial real estate has been heavily leveraged. The capital markets industry has been heavily leveraged for years. So not accurate right now. No.
No longer a trend. Okay. The second one, and this is one of my favorites because I have a very clear thesis on it, but the co-working landscape was hot and doing all the things, and there was land grabs and all of that. But our kind of conversation, there was that piece of it. Then the other piece of it was that we have kind of the niche co-working and that we have the big operator co-working. So to the first point, co-working in general, Carolyn, is it still on a tear?
No. But also, I mean, the fact is nobody's going into offices right now. I mean, like a lot of us are literally banned from going into our offices via the shelter in place policies. But I think co-working is going to change dramatically.
Yeah. I don't know how it, purely because of balance sheets, I'm not sure how it wouldn't change dramatically. Especially some of the larger ones. I just saw that IWG, their stock was off 66%. They've been through this before though, around 2000, and they figured it out. So I don't think they're going away. And I think a lot of the lessons we've learned will stick with us. I still think that this will knock out a few of the big operators, but I think co-working from a niche perspective, I don't think that's going anywhere because that's about building the community, about building resources. I've seen a few like niche co-workings. They're all shut down right now, obviously, so we don't really know what's going on. but a lot of them are offering as much resource as they possibly can to their employees. Especially there's one, a retail one that I know of, that are working really hard to keep their folks connected and to connect people, especially people looking for work. So co-working going fully niche, I think that'll continue even after the virus in the new world or the new normal when that gets established. Okay. The third one that we talked about was the wellness, hospitality, individualization trend. What do you think, Carolyn?
I think we've said a lot of, we've made a lot of points throughout this whole podcast already that speak to the need for digging deeper into that or leaning more into wellness and having greater expectations of landlords and employers to provide those benefits.
Yeah, I agree. I think this one's not going anywhere. I think the wellness piece of it, exactly what you said, I totally agree. Employers and employees are heightened. This is a heightened conversation going forward. Hospitality and that being a way that buildings can differentiate and brand themselves, I think that's going to be super important in a market that could have higher vacancy rates, right? Like having the cooler, really well-branded building that's got hospitality, like Uber hospitality, great. Individualization, I see that being a continued conversation, especially after this. And I think this will be even more important because I think that people are going to, like what they're comfortable with and what the companies are comfortable with and how benching versus not benching versus remote versus not remote. I think there's going to be really individual companies and individual ways that they deal with all of those things. And I don't think there'll be a standard. I think that it'll fracture a lot and each company will do very different things.
I think so as well. And that kind of sparked a thought too, because it's also individualization for the employee. I think we all, right now, everybody that's working from home is having incredibly different experiences. Like if you have to be at home with your kids and a partner who is working or not working, or if you're just a single person living by yourself, you know, either in your own home alone, or if you have roommates, like we all have different pros and cons depending on our living situations right now and trying to utilize our space and, you know, just work with our roommates, basically, like whether your roommate is like, you know, somebody that shares a lease with you or a roommate is like, you know, three small children, like,
or a dog that barks every once in a while in the background and you're like maniacally searching for the mute button.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there's totally different challenges. Like I feel fortunate I don't have a dog in my background on my conference calls or a little kid, you know, trying to get a snack.
Yeah. I know. That's a really good point. I had not really considered how individual everyone's experiences on a day-to-day basis are and how people are organizing their days. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how when people start going back to the office, A, what that looks like, and that can be a different conversation, but how are people going to feel comfortable? I know from what I've heard in China, people aren't comfortable going back out. Like, yeah, the government's saying it's okay. And there's a whole bunch of layers of baggage that goes along with that. But when are people going to fundamentally feel comfortable? And when will, it's not going to be suddenly everything's fine. One day we wake up and it's like, okay, everybody go back to the office. It's all fine again. So how that transition happens will be really interesting from a real estate perspective and what the design and property management standards look like in that moment. So maybe we'll save that for a future podcast. The last one, Carolyn, was the race for talent and how space influences the race for talent. What do you think about that?
Oh, man. I'm at a loss for words.
I know. I should have left it off, but it was a huge part of the conversation 3 months ago was how tight the labor markets were, how hard it was to get certain talent and how important it was for employers to offer potential hires and existing employees an experiential and a safe and well place to be and work. And I hope that some of those conversations can continue because I think they were important conversations.
I agree.
All right. Any other words of wisdom out there here, Carolyn, at the end of March in 2020, while we're in the midst of the shelter in place?
I don't have too many words of wisdom. I think we all need to like realize that this requires a good amount of humility. Like nobody knows what's going to happen. And I mean, I can be a person that looks at numbers all day and they still don't mean that much to me. And I mean, like our own office, we had a bracket guessing when we could go back into our office, and the estimates were all across the board.
Do you want to know what mine was?
You were the latest. I remember that.
I was the latest one, and I bumped it up a month. I actually initially guessed mid-July before we would have like full back into the office, and I bumped it up to mid-June because somebody was like, "You're too pessimistic."
This is not a forecast. This is just Carolyn Bates's personal opinion. I actually missed the deadline to submit my estimate for the bracket, but I it's probably a good thing because I probably would have scared some people. I think it's going to be much later than most people are anticipating right now by the time we can go back to business as usual.
Yeah, I think so too. And so to that end, we will have to come back and have another conversation and see how wildly wrong hopefully some of our stuff was here, and hopefully we're just wrong and it will resolve sooner than we think. But in the meantime, stay safe and healthy, and don't drink hand sanitizer. I'm totally kidding. I realize this is going to be public. Use it on your hands only. It's for external use. Maybe a martini or something. Maybe that'll help with anyway, I'll stop.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Carolyn, for joining me on the fly through. And I will, we will probably put some links in the notes to JLL research so that folks can go and do some digging. You guys do some amazing work. So I will make sure that we are linking to that in the show notes. So I really appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And just to reiterate all the resources we have a lot of, JLL has a lot of content on COVID-19 and how it's playing out and all the different sectors that we cover, which is literally like every property sector. Like we have some analysis on in regards to impact we've seen so far and our thoughts. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. We'll talk soon, I'm sure.
Yes.
I want to thank Carolyn Bates with JLL Research for joining me again. I really enjoyed the conversation and I hope all of you do too. Please stay healthy and safe out there. If you have any comments, questions, you can find me at LinkedIn, theflythrough.com. And of course, if you like it, please do consider subscribing on iTunes. Have a great day.